All right. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. My name is Doug Mitchell. I'm filling in for my friend Ricky Riley. He is helping to prepare for a funeral of a friend of his. I just wanted to start off the program with just a simple reminder and a simple message is to keep yourself safe, both at fires and emergencies, and also with COVID, right? We certainly know that it has affected the fire service in very different capacities. And he lost his friend, Chief Nick Finnemore from the Prince George's County Fire Department to COVID-19 yesterday. It was a sudden shock to him. So we will keep him in our thoughts today. And anyone who's lost family members or brothers and sisters throughout the pandemic, we'll keep them in our thoughts and prayers today as we go through the show. We have a great panel for us today here. We got Stephen Shaw from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We've got Aaron Heller from the newly formed Hamilton Fire Department, which we'll talk about in a little bit. We have Tony Carroll, Chief Carroll from the D.C. Fire Department. And on phone via Scott's iPhone, Captain Scott Kraut from Engine 25, the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department. And today's topic, we're going to talk a little bit about the company officer's role in training. And without further ado, I would like to also introduce the man of the hour, the center pane of all of our screens here today, my man, Chief Bobby Halton. Chief, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for that great introduction. Hey, just real quick, I just want to let everybody know that FDIC's dates have changed and we'll be meeting in August this year. So we'll be in August in Indianapolis, and everybody on the screen that you're looking at will be there, including Scott, who you can't see. He'll be doing his hands-on training class. And so hands-on training is going to be on the 19th and the 20th. That's a Thursday and a Friday. Then the main program is going to be Saturday and Sunday, and classrooms will be Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Exhibit floor is going to open up on Sunday and run on Saturday, and it'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So it's going to be a fantastic time. It's FDIC. It's going to be wild. We wanted to get it in there. And then the call for presentations is going to go out as normal in April. So if you're getting ready to teach for 2022, please get your thoughts in order, what you want to do. You know, we'd love to have you. So that's the news for today. So all the letters went out to all of you, that the 25 plus thousand of you that pre-registered. So your registration will be carried over. We're going to be doing some scheduling stuff. Obviously, some people won't be able to make it. If your class gets canceled or postponed, you know, because of this, we understand. Also, if you're an instructor and those dates are your daughter's wedding, your whatever, you know, your anniversary, we understand stuff happens. You have my promise that I will do everything I can to carry your class over to 2022, just as we did with the 2020 folks. So into 2021. So we understand this is not any of your doing. This is just, as Doug said so eloquently, just another thing to deal with because of this terrible COVID tragedy that we're all going through. So on that, really interesting topic to me, obviously a good buddy of ours from down in Florida. Don't get old, your memory just gets shot. So anyway, once gave me a great cup that says, if you don't think training is the most important thing in your life, then you're a complete and fill in the blank. So, which is pretty much the mantra of this group, right? Train, 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 train. What are we doing today? We're training. What are we doing tomorrow? We're training. What are we doing this afternoon? We're training. It, you know, if your work life isn't devoted to training, you're a fool. You're an absolute fool. Because there are no Jedi masters in this profession. And I've met a lot of great firefighters in my career. And that goes for all the folks on this great call today. Nobody in their wildest dreams would call themselves a master of the entire craft. They might have been really, really exceptional at one specific part or several specific parts. But this is like the most amazing profession in the world when you think about it. I mean, it's just phenomenal. But that's really how the world works, right? That's how civilization advanced. If you think about the evolution of everything, you know, that mankind, when Throg the cave dweller realized that he wasn't really good at making weapons, but Doug the cave dweller was. Doug made the spears. Tony was good at making clothing, so he made the clothing. I was good at hunting, so I went out and hunted. Steve was good at cooking, so Steve would cook. You know, Aaron was, you know, good for nothing, but we liked to have him around anyway, so I'm just kidding. Everybody had a specialty. So that's, and coming together, that's what made civilization, humanity advance, right? Fire service is no different. Nobody's got the keys or answers to everything, but everybody's got a piece of the puzzle. And so the company officer that we're going to talk about today, there's your linchpin. And his job is to figure out, if this was our crew, if the six of us seven of us on this call today were a crew, it would be Doug's job as our boss, or Aaron's job as our Steve, whoever was our boss, to figure out, where does Halton fit in? You know, where does Carol fit in? Where do I lean on Heller? You know what I mean? And that's like the number one skill of a great boss, is finding those hidden talents and capitalizing on them, but also understanding some of our shortcomings and either button us up with somebody who's really good, or helping us to overcome them. So, you know, I got a couple of things I want to bring up later on as we go through this that a couple of my great friends have brought forward to me. One was for a buddy of mine, Jay, a counselor who's been just brought some really great things to light for me in extrication. And then Jerry Knapp. Jerry Knapp and I are working on a tremendous project with Tim from at the Academy, Doug. He's helping us. So I'll bring that up later. But hey, thank you for letting me have the floor first. I wanted to get FDIC out there. Call for presentations that will open in April, just like every other year. It's going to be August. You know, if you got problems with scheduling and you've already registered, our folks will take care of you. We'll roll it over for you, all that good stuff. So looking forward to seeing everybody there. It's going to be a little bit different because we're going to start on a Thursday. But, you know, so one of the folks that I work for said, well, will that really upset the firefighters? Because, you know, it's not like a Monday, you know, you're not starting on a Monday. I said, we don't really pay much attention to like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's like, what shift are you on? And you're on duty. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is for us. So shift starts on Thursday. That's all it is. So we report on Thursday. So for hands on. So you guys will actually report. All of you will actually report probably on Monday or Tuesday. So to set up. So thank you. I'm done. Thank you.
Awesome, Chief. Thank you for that. Yeah, I got that email earlier this morning. I went right to Amazon. I've been looking at Speedos. Summertime sounds great in Indianapolis. So, you know, I'm sure that we'll be looking forward to get the team together in warmer weather. Nothing really heats us up than you know, getting us together, having the ability to maybe get into some pools and stuff like that. I'm gonna look and see what pools are gonna be open, Chief, come summertime. Right? Maybe put me in one of those hotels if you can. That'd be great. I'm sure the team would appreciate it. Wow. Thank you for that introduction. And again, you said one thing there that really stuck with me is knowing your people, right? And as a company officer, you know, the knowing your people is such a huge component of a successful team, knowing the strengths and weaknesses of the players and getting that to function, as you said, pairing those people up with others who have maybe a little deficiency in one thing and somebody else may be very good, and knowing how you compare not only the personalities, but pair up the abilities of that team. And that really, you know, can help help you when you're trying to meet your training goals. Now, I know each one of us, we're all from different fire departments as we meet here. And as far as department-wide training, I had a couple questions, and I just wanted to kind of go around the room, and maybe I'll start with Aaron, since you're, you know, basically a new chief in a brand new organization. Tell us a little bit about your merger, how things came together, and what your department is looking for in terms of training. Who is setting the training goals for your organization?
Well, first off, hello, everybody. Happy New Year. It's crazy. We worked for many years. We were a 9 fire district system in the middle of central New Jersey, just right outside of Trenton, 44 square miles, almost 100,000 people, And we were operating separately, yet running every call together. We had five separate fire chiefs who all had five horns, the whole nine yards. Over the course of the last, literally the last 15 years, we've been working at this thing. And finally, the right political machine got there, and the union and the politicians got together and did it, I think, the right way. So now we are one Hamilton division of fire under the municipal government. So it's 133 uniform staff. We're going to be operating six engine companies, two of which are squads, and two truck companies. It's not quite enough to cover what we do, but it's a start. So we came together January 1. The mayor literally swore in every single one of us individually. Pretty big step. He took his New Year's Day. Because of social distancing, there was supposed to be this huge ceremony and the governor and all that crap, and none of it happened. So, but the mayor said, no, this is too important to me. We're going to do it. And, so literally the only ones who stayed in the ballroom were the five chiefs, the chief of department, and then his four deputies. We stayed in the room the whole day, and the mayor and his staff, and the mayor individually swore in every single firefighter. So 133 of us. So it was really cool. From that, we started, they caught two jobs the first night, like, damn it. And I was off, of course. But as a training priority goes, we've been leading up to this with meetings between the five chiefs and the staff who are going to be our administrative staff and so forth for the last 6-8 months. And I was tasked with training, luckily, because that's pretty much the only thing I know about. And we had a lot of conversations, myself and the ops chief, Steve Kramer, who actually, he's one of our hot instructors at FDIC with us. We talked a lot about what our priorities should be and what are our failings that we've seen over the years and how we bring it together. So with that said, we're the first 2 weeks of the new department, we didn't push out. We're not pushing out a single issue of training other than their mandatories that they can do on their online that we make them, you know, the beginning of the year, CPR, right to know, all that. We wanted to get used to their new firehouses, their new crews, because we blew it all up. Probably 75% of the guys in the firehouses moved to different firehouses. So we wanted to start a new culture, and that was the way we felt to do it. So going from there, the next thing is going to be pushing out an engine company class. This is how Hamilton does engine, and a truck company class. This is what we expect from our trucks. And it'll be taught by the chiefs and the company officers who really specialized in those things. So we got to get ourselves kind of crawling before we even walk and run. Even though these guys have been stretching and operating and throwing ladders for many, many years, we just want to make sure they're all on the same page and doing what we expect of them. So that's been the biggest priority. And then from there, we'll push out a lot of the individual company stuff. And what we found was, we moved some guys into special ops companies, into the two squads and the one truck that do special ops, who don't have every certification, don't have everything they need for it yet, but they're firemen who really want it and who are easily trainable, who have shown a lot of good heart in the house they've been in. And the chief felt this was a good time for that. So the squads and that truck company are going to be training 2 days a week or two times a shift, while the engines and the basic trucks, they're going to be assigned one set training for the day. And then the company officer will determine anything he feels that he or she feels wants to go deeper. But we felt that's our way to try and catch up as fast as we can. Our system didn't break overnight. It was a 100-year-old system. So we know we can't fix it the first week, but we're going to give it hell. So that's where we're at.
That's awesome, man. What a great opportunity to kind of, you know, come in at a new venue and kind of share those experiences that all of those different departments brought to the forefront. You certainly have your hands full getting everybody on the same page, but I think, like you said, you have like-minded people. It's just about dialing in and making sure that everybody's on the same page, which is what I think you said. Yeah. So that's a real, you know, what a unique opportunity. And, you know, you find yourself in a good position, I think, with your experiences to try to make that happen. I'm going to switch over to Chief Shaw in Fort Lauderdale. Can you talk a little bit about how your department sets up their training and what the company officer's role is in not only ensuring that it's completed, but to what what does that refer back to the department?
Right. So, well, first of all, I'm just happy to start 2021 with everybody here and talk about training, talk shop with you all. This is a great way to start the year and talking about something so that we're all so passionate about. For me over here in Fort Lauderdale, you know, I transitioned to EMS last year, and it was an interesting transition because I went there in January and then COVID hit. So that was a nice little ride for me I had last year. But the good thing that happened in terms of that change was that we had a new EMS, our new training chief put in place. And Mike is a phenomenal guy. He's very training focused. So he gave him the opportunity to spread his wings. And right now, they're rolling out the new training curriculum for this year. And we happen to be able to be lucky enough to, or he actually has was lucky enough to build upon a site that we had worked on previously and trained to build a training site. So right now we have a training academy, let's call it, that we're able to do in-house training, which we've never had before. So this year is going to be one of our first years where we're going to be able to do stuff in the city close to home with our brand new prop. And people are very excited about that. In terms of the company officer's role, well, the first things first is the training bureau. You know, it's hard to get all the training done that we want to get done, or that, you know, there's the ones we have to do and the stuff that we like to do. And a lot of stuff that has to be done, whether it's ACLS, BLS, ethics training, compliance training, sometimes takes the priority over some of the stuff that we'd like to do, like acquired structures, high-rise training, RIT training, and all the stuff we dream about doing. So the training bureau does what they can. They get done as much stuff as they can within the calendar that gives us the time. And that calendar becomes very a very high quality product right there. It's very hard to get time in the calendar because there's just so much to do in there. So that's where the company officer comes into play at the station level. We give them the tools and empower them as best we can, but we find that the company officers do what they can in training. And even though we're a busy fire department, we see them out there all the time. I think that from the training bureau's perspective, from the administration's perspective, we all understand that the company officer has a massively important role in terms of influence. Massively important in terms of influence. And I think I remember I was watching a Hump Day Hangout from a few years back where we were talking about this concept. And I made the comment that, you know, in my personal opinion, the company officer is the most influential member of the fire service. And I believe that then, I believe it now, I'll always believe it. So we try to capitalize on that influence. We want to give them the tools to succeed. And training is one way to maximize that influence. There's a strong correlation between training, leadership, and influence. And if the company officer is taking advantage of that, they're just maximizing the opportunity. Because training is a gift. It's an opportunity. It's a platform. It's an angle. It's a conduit for communication. And when we talk about, like, all the leadership traits, that, and whenever you're doing a class, if you ask leadership traits from a group, you get things like influence, communicator, humility, respect, motivator, teacher, empathetic, all these things that you get when you do a leadership class. Through training, they have an opportunity to basically cover all those traits. So, like, even before you're training something, if you let people know beforehand, the shift before, hey, listen, we're going to be training on this today. You're showing them respect. You're letting them know. You're preempting them. You're being truthful to them. Hey, listen, we're going to train next shift. Just so you know, I'm being honest with you. We're going to be training next shift. So they're already getting to demonstrate some of these characteristics. So during training, they're showing their enthusiasm, they're showing their knowledge, they're showing their experience, other traits that we want them to develop. After training, they're praising the crew, they're showing humility by identifying areas where we can all improve. So before, during, and after any training evolution, it almost transcends the content. It goes to basic leadership 101 for company officers. Through training, they have this chance to just basically model all those leadership traits and behaviors on anything, whether it's a single piece of equipment or an 8-hour drill on air. So I think that that's what we try to tell our officers through recent officer development classes and just interactions. We want you to train out there because it's not just about the content, because you have an opportunity as a company officer to show how much of a leader you are. And we try to give them the tools to kind of let them go. We'll give them structure. We'll give them ideas of what to train on. We'll give them monthly topics. We want them to have that opportunity to stand in front of people, whether it's EMS training, fire training, special ops training. We want them to demonstrate their leadership through whatever training media they're using.
Yeah, that's a great, you brought up some really great points there, empowering your people, influence, and how, you know, you can, you know, inspire your company officers. Basically, I like what you said there, to transcend the content. So you know, giving your company officers the skills, the abilities, the tools through a framework, you know, whether that's formal or informal, to meet the department's training goals, I think is paramount. Just to say like, hey, we got a drill period between 2 and 4 in the afternoon and, you know, 7 and 9 at night. And, you know, a company officer may need a little more guidance than that. Some company officers may be able to kind of handle that and maximize their team's abilities during those hours, if you will. But having some sort of defined program or schedule for them to follow, and then giving them the tools, like you said, whether that's providing them with the props, letting them go to the academies, letting them get out onto the streets for building familiarization, area familiarization, et cetera, is all great, great stuff. Thank you very much for that, Steve. Tony, over in our nation's capital, what's going on with you in terms of your company officers? I know you're a battalion chief in the 2nd Battalion. What are you looking for in your company officers as far as providing training for their members? I'm sure that the District of Columbia Fire Department has a, you know, a monthly or a quarterly, you know, schedule for trainings that they would like, you know, the company officers to meet. But you as a battalion chief, you're riding around, you know, stopping in, saying hello. What are you looking for in your company officers as far as meeting your department's training goals?
Something, right? I want them to see. I would like to see them doing something. The fire department, and I mean, we all are a busy fire departments. That's kind of what right now I think we're trying to keep our head above water when it comes to the runs, the demands on that. Also trying to keep ourselves safe from the new PPE requirements with COVID, everything that's going on. And so the officer is going to have to find a way to jam some training in all of this stuff. It's tough, right? Because we're sending some messages like stay in the firehouse, but socially distance, but also get some training in. Then right now we're coming up on the end of March, which is now odd year or even year EMS recertification, which, you know, those are the mandated things. And I think that that's where the department's goals are, to make sure you keep your EMS certification. Fire training, you know, jam it in there and get some if you can, I think. Right now, another initiative that's happening for us is we're getting new SCBAs. We are transitioning, finally replacing our pretty old stuff that's seen its useful life. So every company, and it's pretty impressive. We are training SCBA. We're sending out 9 instructors a day. That is 3 groups of 3 to various firehouses, 4 hours at a time, to get ever how many companies they can trained in the new SCBAs. And it's 7 days a week, which again, that's pretty unique that we're doing it 7 days and not 5 days. So that's going out. We're trying to get everybody up to speed. And after the inauguration happens, hopefully these new SCBAs will hit the street and everybody will be trained on that. In addition, like I said, the EMS stuff, again, without in-person, since we don't really have any in-person training at the academy for our EMS stuff, it's up to the members and the company officer to try and make sure that they get their online EMS stuff taken care of and be ready for the end of March recertification cycle. So everybody is up to speed on that. So that's really our goals. Now, as a battalion chief with 7 companies, trucks, and then a bunch of EMS units, I want them to do something. What I have done for them and tried to do for them is taken every day, right? Obviously Mondays, when we work on a Monday, guess what we're training on? Mayday Monday. Tuesday is a truck Tuesday. Wednesday is water Wednesday. Thursday is tactical Thursdays, where they can look at subways. They can look at special ops stuff if they want to do that. Friday's free-for-all Friday. It's really a company officer-driven day. Saturdays and Sundays, Saturdays and Sundays, we have sometimes a rotating in through the academy. They've set up some days for us to go to the academy. So those were what Saturdays and Sundays before.
So Sundays is a big I just have to interject, but the kids would hate me if I didn't do this. So here's my face when Tony Carroll says Mondays are Mayday Monday. You ever see those like silly memes? Tony Carroll, Mondays are Mayday Monday. Like, no poop.
Right. I appreciate that. So Saturdays or Sundays is a big push citywide for our ladder trucks to get their pole ladders up. Again, we don't have a whole lot of chances for that. So that's an initiative that we've kind of done as battalion chiefs and deputy chiefs and ship commanders, is that the 45 foot ladder day is the Sundays. We get that out. So that's really it. As the battalion chief, I want them to do something. So does that hit the fire department initiative? Is that the DC fire and EMS department's initiative? I mean, but it's definitely mine because I've grown up with officers who spend their day in their room. Right. And then the company is kind of left to their own devices, if they will. Right. And I mean that by it's kind of up to some of these members to want to learn more about what's going on in their job. So my officers understand that it's all about training. Like we said, like Bobby said, train and train some more. And we need to take every opportunity to try and get some training in. Doesn't have to be an 8-hour drill. It can be a 15-minute thing, but get something in. So that's a nutshell. I guess that's it. Do something.
Yeah, Tony, I agree with you on that. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the 8-hour drill. I'm a fan of after every run, we get 8 or 10 runs in a day tour. After every run, I take 15 minutes, or during every run, after we've mitigated whatever emergency is there, I'll take 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour to discuss something that's in my first due that, you know, we don't know a lot of times as company officers, we don't know what our people don't know. And the last thing a firefighter is going to do is tell you, I don't know that, or I don't know what I'm doing here. That's not how they operate. That's not how we operated when we were firefighters. So we certainly have to understand that, you know, sometimes just talking through things. All right, hey, you got the roof position. How are you going to get to the roof in this building? What are your options? What are your secondary options? What are your tertiary options? What if you're going to be delayed? What notifications do you have to make? Who do you have to make them to? So all of those little pieces, like while we're already out, we're on the street, no one loves the firehouse more than me. So, I mean, once we're out there, we're on that run, you know, we're in our neighborhood, we're looking at our buildings, we're talking about our positions. I feel like a company officer, while he may not be the best to sit down and have a formal 1-hour drill on, you know, whatever the case may be, when you're out in the street and you can do 15 minutes here and there, boop, 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 you pick everybody's brain, you know that, you know, Bobby's a locksmith on the side. And hey, Bobby, look at this lock over here. How are we going to get this open? Do we have to cut it? Can we go through the lock? Can we go around the lock? Can we cut above and below and open up the channel? All of those little things, now you have a discussion. And the company officer, most times, all I have to do is just kind of like, just throw a dart out into the air, and everybody else just swarms around it like, yeah, and this, and then we can try that. And oh, look at this, and look over here. And it just, eventually you're like, okay, guys, come on, let's go. Bring it back in. Let's get back to the firehouse. We got to get something to eat. You know what I mean? Whatever the case may be.
But just take opportunistic, right? Take that opportunity. If that run presents you with something that you haven't seen in a while, well, let's brush up on that. No, I like it. I mean, if you stay on the streets, like you said, stay on the streets, go on a run. Let's take a chance and look at this. How are we going to run standpipe in this stairwell? You know, whatever. But opportunistic opportunity.
So the other thing I think that I would like to talk about is, and I love the schedules, but a lot of us were, you know, potty trained at gunpoint. In other words, if we don't have a calendar, you know, and we got to do this, we got to do that. And I get all that. I think it's really, really important. But sometimes the really critical gaps that occur, you know, come from some of these calls that we go to. And I just want to share something that I think is really important to get out there. I've got an incredible article I'm going to be publishing really soon from Jerry Knapp. And it's about natural gas emergencies. And metal oxide sensors, I know you carry one on every rig at the FDNY, Doug, but I would just ask the rest of you, how many, Tony, Aaron, Steve, Scott, do you guys carry metal oxide sensors on your rigs? You're going to want to read this article, man. You know, so there's a huge training gap in the fire service because the article is fantastic. It explains exactly how to use it. But if you're going to natural gas emergencies and you don't want to get killed, read this article. You know, all the diversity training and, you know, all the, you know, politically correct stuff we got to do and all the, you know, learning all the new pronouns and all that stuff. I get it. You got to do that stuff. Lockout, tag out, the stuff that's mandatory, you know, CPR, all the stuff we got to do routinely. It's very, very important. I'm not diminishing that. That ain't going to get you killed. That ain't going to get you killed. So not understanding how to handle explosive gases, that'll get you killed. And if you're relying on your four gas meter, you're in trouble, big trouble. So not that you don't need it, but you need to be thinking about a metal oxide sensor. So it's a fascinating piece. And Jerry brought it to me. I was as dumb as the woods, like everybody else. It's not, I didn't think this Jerry Knapp and is bringing this to the forefront. And then the other thing I wanted to bring forward too, is that those conversations are, and this is how it happens, right? All the folks that are on Facebook right now are Googling it, all the people, that's how the fire service works. All the stuff from on high, if anybody thinks that central government and central planning, or we should have a national this, yeah, good luck with that. That you want to see things get bad in a hurry, go look at some of these nationalized fire departments. You know, they're really good at just about nothing. So, but the American Fire Service is really great at just about everything because we're allowed to take this conversation. I'll bet you there's 10, 15, 20 people out there trying to figure out who Jerry Knapp is right now so they can get a hold of him and find out what he's writing about and what he's talking about now. So, and so I'm really excited and we're going to get this article out as fast as we can. It's phenomenal, but there's a big training gap. I mean, here are five of the most elegant firefighters I know who are like clueless. We don't know what you're talking about. Don't have it. And that's okay. That the coolest thing about being in the fire service, and as Doug just said, lots of times people, if they think they're expected to know something, they'll be reluctant to say they don't. But man, I read stuff that you folks send to me every day. And I'm like, didn't know that. Wow. Holy smokes. You know what I mean? And they say God looks out for drunks and fools. And I think I'd list firefighters on there too, because, you know, and that's, Jerry says that in his piece, you know, we go to these emergencies over and over again, and nothing bad happens. And then boom, it does. And men and women die on those calls. And it's violent. And it's really, really violent. And a bunker gear ain't going to save us. Your SCBA ain't going to save you. You know, your ability to flow water ain't going to save you. So explosive emergencies are something I think we really need to start taking a hard look at again. And then we got folks looking at the stuff in the gear. I mean, that's a real big question that's out there right now. We got to be honest about it. I mean, what are we doing there? You know, how bad is that? We don't know. We're finding out. It's okay not to know. You know, there's all kinds of conflicting reports. It's great. You know, my stance has always been, you know, plan for the worst and hope for the best, right? And then this other fellow, Jay Counselor, who I mentioned earlier, wonderful guy, came to me and we're talking about extrication. And I helped do the training for my volunteer fire department. I'm proud to be associated with out here. And he started talking about, well, what do you do about laminated glass? You know, I said, well, we got a punch. He said, no, I said, laminated glass, you moron. What do you, it's on the side windows now. And I'm like, okay, didn't see that coming. You know what I mean? And those of you that do more extrication than me, maybe you did, but I don't do that. I don't do enough of it. So, you know, I think that's another thing we really, what kind of tools are you using? You know, and if you're relying on your little punch to take the window, yeah, ain't going to work. You know, you're going to get jammed up. But a company officer, you know, if he sees that at a call, a good company officer can say, okay, let's look into this. And then if he finds some real good information, he can reach out to a training chief like Tony or Steve or Aaron and you can say, hey, boss, me and my crew are doing this. We're looking at this. Can we fit this into a company-wide curricula? You know, you can, the FDNY, that's how, you know, the FDNY just pushed it all through, I think about 2 years ago. And you know, they got great protocols on it. So we're going to really be hitting that this year. And we're going to be really looking at some stuff that, and all the other stuff's important. You know, I get it. Mental health's important, and it's all of it's really, really critical stuff. But the calendar gets full sometimes, and we got to remember to stay focused on the stuff that's going to kill us. Moving water, you know, throwing ladders, working off of ladders, being on roofs, being under fire, over fire, you know, all of those things. You know, if you're not reading everything you can by, you know, the folks that have written great stuff on it, whether it's Avila or whether it's, you know, Norman, whether it's Ray McCormick or, you know, any of the great, you know, flow masters out there, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're really doing yourself a huge disservice. So I think that the cool thing about a company officer is you're not shackled, you know, to what the training officer shackled to. Because I've been a training officer, we've all been training officers. You know, when you look at the training calendar, you know, somebody comes to you with, hey, can we fit this in? You're like, I'll kill you. I'll kill your children. I'll kill your children's children, you know, because, you know, you're it's so packed. So I just want to grab a couple of the questions offline, if you don't mind me, as the ombudsman. And this is a really good question. And it comes to us from Judah. And thank you, Judah. He said, the question becomes, how do you ensure documentation of training at the company officer level? That's a great question. And I think for a lot of these guys might have some better answers, but what we do, and again, I work with a medium-sized volunteer combination fire department, is a company officer can document it in writing, describe it, and then enter it into our electronic system. And that's all we really need. And then you can accredit, you know, 1.2 hours, you know, 0.5 hours, 3 hours, whatever it was. And then sometimes they'll benchmark it, you know, cross-reference it, crosswalk it to a different standard or a different piece of training or whatever. But oftentimes it's just, you know, under the topic of general fire training or general EMS training or general, and then the category extrication, forcible entry, you know, hand line. And then we have an electronic system that then goes into and populates everybody's records. It's not the fanciest thing in the world, but it works for a combination volunteer fire department. So everybody has access to it for individual stuff. And then the company officer can enter for other people. So that's how we do it, but I don't know. So the question is, how do you ensure documentation during the training at the company officer level?
Yeah, Chief, I'll just say that, you know, honestly, unlike some of the things that you had mentioned, EMT, CPR, bloodborne pathogens that have to be renewed at a certain time frame, there is no Firefighter One research. There is no real standard for company and individual firefighter training. If you went to Firefighter One, you know, back in the mid 80s, that's when you went. And the really, so to document it, it depends, as you just said, whatever your department deems to be, you know, a qualified training experience for you, you know, again, that information should be documented. It should be written down, the hours that you've put in to maintain your level of proficiency, whether there really is not in most departments a recert per se. And I'll throw it back out there to the other groups. I want to throw it first to Scott Kraut. I know you spent some time in Fairfax's training bureau, Scott. Is there any kind of formal or documentation that you do as a captain and 25 engine, or that the training division maintains for your membership, Scott?
Yeah, we use, and again, I'm not selling a product, but we use Target Solutions as our platform for all of our online training, all of our training. It provides us with ISO certification, all of which I don't care anything about, but it's a good tool. You know, just like Chief Alton said, you go in, you pick a category, you explain what you did, you put down the hours that you put in, and you move on. But like you just stated, it's kind of the frustrating part is that, you know, we don't have mandatory, you know, and I guess it's a double-edged sword, that, you know, on the fire side, we're not held to any standard, which, you know, I'm sure in years to come, and, you know, probably when we're all long gone, and with, you know, liability being what it is these days, that, you know, I'm sure that's something the fire service as a whole will probably look at some point. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea. You know, what is it, it says a lot about us as fire service members that we don't have fire mandatory training, but yet that's Chief Shaw said, that's what we want to do, right? We want to do the rich stuff. We want to stretch lines. We want to, as Chief Alton said, we want to train on the things that are going to kill us. And to your point, Doug, you know, I think that street smart after the call training is where it's at. I mean, especially these days, we're all busy. Calendars are jam packed. You know, the run totals are going up. And I think, you know, that's the only way to get it in. And as you said, that, you know, all the stuff that we have, you know, that I've done with my group there with Chief Halton's blessing and traditional training, you know, doing the stuff that we do at FDIC is all predicated on that, you know, because you're right. You stand in a group of 10 of us and nobody's going to raise their hand if they don't know. And as you said, you don't know what you don't know. And you certainly don't know what your crew doesn't know until you witness it. And hopefully that's not too late. So I just assume as a company officer that my men and women don't know anything, and myself included. You know, we as you said, we walk through these incidents and we go, hey, you know, I didn't see that or didn't know that. And Chief Halton's point, you know, I was Googling the meter because we don't have them in Fairfax. And yeah, that's one of those instances that's going to kill us. I looked at an article the other day. Again, just as a refresher, I was thinking we got some acquired structures, and I was thinking, you know, what can we do with these buildings, you know, other than the typical stuff that we will do? And I looked up on the roof, and I was like, ah, rooftop units. I went back, looked at a good article and video, somebody from FDNY with in conjunction with somebody else, did a nice fire engineering, you know, training minutes on rooftop units. And the guy obviously had some experience with heating and air conditioning. So great little tidbits there. As you said, Doug, 15 minutes, you know, and then pass that on to my crew. Hey, let's go look at this rooftop unit, take it apart, look at some of the stuff that's going on inside. So that, when we get the run, you know, go back to the gas explosion thing. Yeah, the rooftop unit's probably not going to cause us all hell, but at least you can give the all clear and know what the hell you're talking about. So on the documentation piece, yeah, we use a system. I'm sure a lot of people use systems, but on the training piece, I'm totally with you on the quick down and dirty stuff between the runs.
Yeah, I think that proves to be most fruitful for both the members and the company officer. Again, you know, not everybody's equipped or prepared to come and sit down, you know, for an hour long drill and talk about water supply or you know, getting to the roof. But there's times and places, and I have used, you know, we have a computer kiosk in every firehouse, and we can put that into our big screen TV and just go to Google Earth and go down block by block. Look, here's the block right behind the firehouse. What types of buildings do we have here? What can you tell me looking at them from above that you can't see from the street? So again, just try to be creative, you know, with technology, especially now with us, you know, trying to keep our members safe and maybe not interacting with the public as much. You know, that's some of the things that you can do in quarters. Again, just go to a building in your first do and just go to the Google Earth view of it from the front and then have them spin around to the rear. You know, again, if you can do that in the firehouse or even on somebody's phone, if they know how to project it. I don't know how to do it, like, any of that kind of stuff, but they all do. Trust me. So get one of your new tech savvy guys. I wasn't on the AV squad when I was in high school, but I'm sure there's some guys in your companies and in your firehouses now who could easily help you out with the technology. And when you tell them what you want to do, they're like, yeah, yeah, that'd be awesome. And then we can kind of literally, again, keeping it in your first do, keeping it relevant, keeping it topical to your company and the buildings that you're going to be going to that are in your first and your second do areas. You know, Aaron, when you combined these different companies and when you combined now, obviously, the way you made it seem like the shifts kind of got all mixed up. So now you've got new officers. You may have existing officers, but they have a new crews. Mm-hmm. What do you think are some of the challenges for a company officer today to get these training goals met and not really like checking the box, but more of like some of those leadership things that Steve talked about earlier. As far as for a new officer on a new shift, you just got promoted, you're walking into a new place for the first time. Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm the lieutenant. And, you know, you've got four guys that you're working with now on a regular basis that are assigned to you who really know nothing about you, only that you came from the place next door and you had a pretty good reputation as being a, you know, a decent guy.
Yeah, I think the big learning curve there is that that adjustment to each other is a big deal. So the first day in company, you got to have that kitchen table conversation with, this is as an officer, this is kind of how I've run things. As a brand new officer, it's my first day as an officer, this is how I'd like to run things. And, you know, I'm open to suggestions. I think that the crew, you have to get some buy-in from your crew. I know that we work in a paramilitary situation and, you know, listen, I'm the boss, and they're the underling, but that never works. You know, there's got to be some buy-in, there's got to be trust, and there's got to be some good conversations. I can tell you my first day in the new fire department was 3 days ago. And myself and my battalion, and our battalions are brand new. We never had battalion chiefs before. So myself and my battalion drove to every firehouse in town, and we sat and had a cup of coffee with every single crew in town. And we talked about what they should expect from us, kind of how we run things, what we expect from one another, and what we try to get out to them, and try to get their concerns and their ideas. Because what I found is when I was younger, there was definitely the sit down, shut up kid, one mouth, two ears. And I was just reading Jim Moss's book, his firefighter success book that just came out, right? What I'm plowing through it like almost too fast because I'm enjoying it so much. And that was one of the things that he brings up, is that's something that we were taught. This group of firefighters that we see today, they've got ideas, they've got questions, they've got a lot of intelligence, and they do understand things that we probably didn't back then. So encouraging them to share a little bit about themselves, encouraging them to share what they see as their weaknesses, what they see as the department's weaknesses, and maybe I can incorporate some of that into company level training. And me as a chief who's in charge of training, I can absolutely sit with my training captain and say, hey, the guys over at squad 12 told me that this is a concern from theirs that they've got. You know, where can we kind of guide? What can we guide their way that's going to help them or help the whole department with that? So I really do believe that communication is really a big deal, kind of like Steve said. And from there, it really is getting that idea. If I was a new company going to a full crew, like I was a new officer going to a full crew of guys who've been there a while, I'd look at their reputation. You know, absolutely. You know, listen, ladder one, those guys don't like opening roofs. You know, they're not big on vertical ventilation. They just like breaking every window in town. So how do I adjust what our training is to show them the reasons why we do things differently? So I think that has something to do with it. If you're going to an established crew that you know, you're the new officer at. And as far as documentation goes for us, we've used the system for years. We used firehouse software. Right now we're in the process of a new system we just bought. And we thought it would be ready for January 1, and now they're telling us June 1. So we're going to be doing a lot of stuff in the old system and then trying to transfer it over. So, but I
sounds about normal. Six month delay and
yeah.
at a minimum in any type of fire department operation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But
hurry up and wait.
But that's really where I would go with it. It's all about finding those strengths and weaknesses and then adjusting towards that. Like I know certain companies are great engine companies. They're stretching all the time. They pull past or they pull short. They leave room for the truck. But that's something that I'm entering into our new engine program is these guys were so successful with it for so long. I want you all doing this, you know? So that's that kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. I think you said a few things there that I'm just going to reiterate to you. One is, you know, set expectations. I think that's a really good thing. Listen, we're all human beings at the end of the day, whether you've got cross bugles, stripes, whatever. We're all human beings. We're all fallible. We all can make mistakes. But by setting clear expectations, not only for your crews, but for yourself, putting yourself as if you're that officer, listen, whether you like it or not, you have responsibilities that come with that title. And whether you garner a paycheck or not, you are responsible for the actions and the inactions of the crew that you are supervising. And you will be held accountable, sometimes in the court of law. So, you know, training is not just a checkbox, right? Chief Holden said, you know, training is like your life depends on it. And, you know, the gas emergencies, things that he was talking about, you know, we always seem to be very reactive in our organizations, right? We have an incident, we have a tragedy, and then we react upon it. You know, we lost Deputy Chief Fahey to a gas explosion. And largely in that instance, all the companies there did everything right. So we can do everything right and still have a bad day. That is for certain on this job. And I think the chief said it very eloquently, is, you know, God looks out for us many, many times than I think, you know, sometimes. I mean, how many fires can we all personally attest to? The smoke lifts and you're like, holy cow, there's a row of oxygen cylinders just, you know, literally lined up against the wall. And you're like, oh, you know, really?
Can I interject for a second there, Doug? Because that's a great point. And right now, if you're listening and you're on there on the Facebook or you're just tuning in and you have one of those stories, we're doing a book right now called The Invisible Hand. And it's basically those stories, Doug. And everybody has one or two or three or four, depending on where you're from, to where, you know, you're in a job, whatever. And somebody turns to you and says, we got to get out of here. And you're like, why? Let's go. And you bail out. Next thing you know, catastrophe. And then you turn to them and say, man, what'd you see? No idea. Or, you know, or I heard something in my head, or all kinds of different stories. We got a couple of guys who've sent some in that said, you know, my mom had passed away and I heard my mom's voice saying, you know, get low or something. I'm like, really, you know, and you can, people can shake their head or whatever, you know, but for that firefighter, that's why they got low, and they're alive today and they're telling that story and they ain't backing down. And I love those kinds of stories. So it's called The Invisible Hand. And sometimes it's just, you know, is it dumb luck? Is it God? Is it your, you know, is it so your guardian angel looking out for you? Is it, you know, recognition, you know, is it unconscious, you know, thought process, because, you know, Dr. Gary Klein talks about, you know, you're taking in so much stuff that you do some pattern matching unconsciously. It's called recognition prime decision-making. You don't even think about it. Is it that? Who knows? But the stories are fantastic. So if you have a story and you're interested, you can send it to me at Bobby Halton at clarionevents.com, or, you know, Bobby Halton at Gmail, and I'll forward it along, and we're taking a collection of them and we're going to publish a book called The Invisible Hand. And, that comes from Adam Smith. He calls it the invisible hand that moves, you know, markets and such. But the invisible hand, what was it? I don't know. And so, you know, we're going to kind of do like a Twilight Zone kind of thing about it. You know, like, imagine this, if you will. Tony Carroll woke up thinking today would be like any other day in the great city of Washington. Little did he know that he was about to enter, you know, the invisible hand, you know. So, and then we tell Tony's story. And sometimes they're just inexplicable. You know, they're just literally inexplicable, you know, and so we want to hear those stories. Right. And Doug is absolutely right too. Just because we do everything right doesn't mean everybody's going to go home. You know, that I've looked at that fire report and the chief was across the street, Doug, you know, standing by his rig. It's just a, you know, unfortunately, a foot to the right or a foot to the left, it would have been a completely different outcome. Or even a couple inches, right? I mean, you know, so, and those things happen, you know, and that's why this job is what it is. You know, we're really, you know, people look at our bunker gear and oftentimes they think that, you know, it's fireproof. I often hear, well, isn't your gear fireproof? I'm like, yeah, as long as the fire doesn't get hotter than about 300 degrees, it's freaking awesome. You know, from there it goes like downhill fast, you know what I mean? And even at 300 degrees, you know, when you think about it, you know, those kinds of temperatures, you're feeling it, you know, you're feeling it in places where you don't have all those layers. And, you know, that's really about it. You know, over that, it gets really sporty fast. You know what I mean? And folks don't want to admit that, you know, it's good up to 1500 degrees. Yeah. Your hood ain't, your face piece ain't, you know what I mean? So, you know, even our ensemble has really critical, you know, weak points, and it ain't going to save you. And your air supply is limited. So it's a, you know, what's in that bottle is a round trip ticket. You know, if you outrun it, man, it's a bad day. So, and you can be doing everything right. And Scott's class, you know, I'll brag on Scott's class. He does a wonderful job of helping you get ready for those situations. Scott's class is probably second to none. Maiming people at the speed of flashover is really a, I'm just teasing you, Scott. Scott's gonna get mad at me for saying that. He hates that. But so Scott, don't hit me when you see me, because he's actually a very powerful human being. So, but drilling at the speed of flashover, that's a, if you want to sign up for anything that, at FDIC, go there and make sure. And Aaron's class, you know, we go to gazillions and gazillions of residential jobs, you know, and multiple family jobs. We don't go to a gazillion commercial jobs, most of us, you know, and that's where you're going to get jammed up. So, you know, make sure you're there. And Steve has actually decided to grace us with a class this year. Doug, I can hardly believe it. You know, the great Steve Shaw decided that, you know, he was going to teach. I'm just teasing. And then Tony's got his class. You know, you want to definitely be in there. He's going to take you through the May Day experience, then some. And Doug and the guys, Doug's going to be teaching. And Doug is in the batter's box for keynoting. So he doesn't like to bring that up often, but he's in the batter's box for keynoting. So I'm so looking forward to that. That's going to be pretty freaking amazing. So yeah, I think that, you know, we spoke so much about the company officer, and I think that if, regardless of your rank, you could be, you know, the battalion chief, the citywide tour commander, you could be the kid who got out of the academy yesterday. Doesn't mean you don't have something that you can't bring forward and help everybody really learn something really cool about, you know what I mean? You know, I love working with the young folks out at this volunteer job, because if a car was built after 1976, it's not really a car. It's a transportation vehicle for people that don't like to drive. So, but they tell me all really interesting things about these things that people seem to be enamored with that are really just horrible. You know, they don't have points. They don't have points. They don't have points. You can't get in there and clean the points, and you know what I mean? Set them yourself. It's unbelievable to me. It's not really a car. So anyway, but these young people show me all kinds of really interesting stuff about that. They show me all kinds of really interesting stuff about a lot of the drug stuff that's going on today that I'm just not familiar with anymore. Back in the day, I was pretty damn up to speed on it, but there's a reveal for you, but not today. Right. And so, you know, yeah, Doug's hiding his face. I went to college in the early 70s, late 60s. Come on. I can't say, and I trying to deny it would be the biggest lie on the face of the, I'd look like Bill Clinton. So, And I never smoked pot with Bill Clinton. That I can actually say. So, but if you have to listen to their voices, because they can really help you avoid a lot of problems. You know, like when fentanyl first came out, you know, we didn't even know that just being anywhere near that stuff, getting it on your clothing, could kill you. You know what I mean? That's terrifying, right? So I hope that the folks that were listening to us didn't think that we meant it. Just has to all fall on the company officer. But I think to Doug's point, and you said it better than I could, but it falls to the company officers to make sure that everybody feels okay with contributing and everybody feels okay with jumping in. And I'm just going to read this because it came across from Facebook, and I think that's important. I really want to thank the Facebook people. It comes from Jean-Anton Ramirez. Jean-Anton Ramirez says, I'm a civilian, but I teach in a magnet school for high school kids interested in the fire service. My question is, once probation is over, do most firefighters get further training? You refer to from the stations here and there. Are there no yearly? Once you get in, are you expected to know, you know, everything? So Doug and Tony and Steve, why don't you guys take that? That's a great question, and fill in the blanks there, because the short answer is no, we always are training, and there's tons of training, but why don't you guys fill it in?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start off real quick. No, obviously, probation for us is just a timeline, if you will. When you come graduated from the recruit academy, the fire academy, you are expected to know the basics. And as Aaron talked about in his department, which he might have had five different fire districts that were doing things slightly different. This way, when you come out of a fire academy, you know the basics for your department, and pretty much that's it. It is filled in almost instantly when you get to the firehouse and you get to your first due area, and you start learning the intricacies of the bigger picture, which kind of takes your general math down to calculus. So you start off in your fire service career with a broad scope. We don't have time at the academy to teach everybody every little nuance, but all of the main facets, the main tenets of firefighter training, and then you hone those skills. And we talked before about mastery. You know, you hone those skills throughout your career, especially off your once you get off probation. You know, probation, you're the firefighters, it seems like every day a probie has so many things that they're learning. It's almost a sensory overload. So my opinion, your real learning kind of happens, you know, it's every day, but the conceptions of learning to transforming into performing really kind of happen at the 2-3-4 year window. And then once that happens, you're starting to now be the teacher. And I think if you can cultivate that in your people, that, you know, just because you're off probation certainly does not mean that you have mastered it. That's basically the tip of the iceberg. You haven't killed yourself or gotten somebody else killed in your first year. Now, hang on, because you're really going to get to learn the meat and the potatoes of the job and what it's all about. And I think not only that comes a little bit from the company officer who sets the tone for the company, but also that middle management within the shift. I'll throw it over to Steve, and then I'll throw it down to Tony. Put your two cents in on this question here that comes from Jean Antoine.
So I'll be relatively brief. I know we're at the top of the hour, but coming from a previous training chief's position in which I was the chair of a larger subcommittee on training for the county, I got a chance to see how multiple departments were doing their training. And it waxes and wanes, and it always is very variable. But for the most part, to answer that question, what I've noticed, and especially with some of the departments in my neck of the woods, we talked about tracking before, right? Getting everything in the target solutions or fire rescue, whatever the software. I found it pleasing at one point that I knew training was being done so much so, and the frustrating part that I wasn't able to track it all. But every time I went out, somebody's doing something. And that was so pleasing for me to see, whether it was the north side of the city, the south side, the downtown, one of the busier areas, whether it's a specialty team training, somebody was doing something with training. So yes, there's a lot of internal training in the beginning when you get your initial stuff through minimum standards or the fire academy. Yes, there's a lot of training that first year. And for the people that don't know, and everybody kind of alluded to it already, you're right, they are inundated with information. There's more expected from an entry-level firefighter today than has ever been expected before, between EMS, special operations, weapons of mass destruction, EMS, community risk reduction, looking into community paramedicine. There's so many things that they're expected to know about now that it's mind-boggling to the person that started 20 years ago or further back. So, you know, Doug's right about that. We got to make sure that once they get on the job, it's tailoring that training specifically to what we need them to know, focusing on the things that will get them hurt the most, getting them to a point where they know how to stay safe and get a good baseline down so they can start building upon that baseline. But I got to tell you, just from my area alone, it's nice to see how much training is being done out there. And it was, again, one of those things that I found very, very just it made me feel good inside when I saw how much was being done, whether it was from the training bureau or from the station companies on their own. And it was just comforting knowing that they're on their own training, preparing for that next call.
Well, I think that you're right, though. As you get done with the academy, right, we have a set standard for the rookies, for the probationers. And we take them through their skills that they have to kind of show that they learned and the officer knows that they've got and those things. And then I get the opportunity to kind of to check them off as well as when they finish their probation. Now it can kind of get into a more refinement depending on where they go, right? Let's say you go to an area that's got a lot of high rises. Then you're gonna have a company that's gonna learn a lot about high rise operations. If you go to an area that's got a lot of single family dwellings or row homes, that kind of thing, they are going to take the time now to refine their operations on that. Same thing with, right, like if you get a lot of EMS runs, if you're a busy company, maybe you do that. So there's always going to be training, right? We hope that there is. So that's kind of what I wanted to emphasize is I don't necessarily like the word training, because we get a lot of training on when we get something new, right? When we get a new piece of equipment, we get trained on it. Then it's up to you to practice, to turn that into practice. Much like football players, right? The NFL, they don't train a lot, but they practice every day. And that's where we should be. We should be practicing for that next game, right? We're only as good as our next fire. We're only as good as our next EMS run. We can't live on the last one. We have to prepare ourselves for the next one, because the next one could be that whale that thing we've never seen before. The one that no one has seen, the fire of our career. So we should be practicing and getting ready for that. So as much as I'm a training guy, but I live to train, right? But I think it really should be practicing, and we should be getting ready for that. Now, again, the answer for the question is yes, there is going to be lots of training once they get out of their school, and you'll see that in their companies. Before we leave, can I take 1 second real quick? And today is the anniversary of the death of Matt Letourneau from the Philadelphia Fire Department. And as a member of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, I want to make sure that we give a shout out to him and his sacrifice. He did a lot of work with us when we were doing the basement fire stuff. Good friend of the ISFSI. And today is the anniversary of that. So thank you, Matt, for what you've done for the fire service. You're missed.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tony. Unfortunately, there really aren't too many days that go by on the calendar that we don't have a somber thought for a fallen comrade. That certainly is well put. Thank you for that.
And not to add to it, but I hate to tell you guys, but I just got a notification that Deputy Chief Albert Schick from the Wakanda Fire Department, where he did 27 years. He retired 5 years ago. Al was a frequent speaker and at FDIC. You guys all knew him. He passed away this morning.
Yeah, unfortunately, as we all know too well in our profession, and I mean profession as in being professional, both in and out of the firehouses and on fire grounds and in our daily lives back and forth in our communities, we know all too well the reality of death, and we see it far more often than we probably need to. So I certainly, all those people will be in my thoughts, again, during this pandemic. Certainly, a lot of our, people are exposed, and a lot of our families are exposed. Please don't forget about your family at home, and how important you are to them and they are to you. Try to do your best to minimize your impact and your exposure in any chance that you may be able to get and see fit. I was just going to go around the room, Chief. I know you have some appointments that you need to keep this afternoon. I was just going to go around the room and just give a 2 minute, that company officer in training. Just go around the room. I know I was going to go to Scott, but Chief, if you want to jump in first.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I've got an appointment I've got to keep. I apologize. When you make company officer, there's two things that happen, and you're going to do this. The first thing is eventually one of these days, you're going to grab your collar like this, and you're going to say, well, because, and anybody who says they never did that is lying. And the minute you do it, you realize you're a jerk, and then that's okay. So then you get that past you. And then the second thing you realize is how little you actually know. And that's okay too. When you make captain, you're going to feel the same way. When you make district chief, when you make battalion chief, when you make assistant deputy, chief of department, every time you get promoted, you have that moment of, I'm the great pretender. I don't belong here. I don't know enough to be in this position. That's okay. That's really okay. Share that with your team, and your team will let you know what they know you know. Because oftentimes, those moments of uncertainty, they hit us all, and that's absolutely fine. And it's really good. It's a really, really good thing. you know, no one's expected to know everything. So, you know, when your troops come to you and they say, hey, you know, how do we do this? Like, I can barely tie my shoelaces. I'm the world's worst knot guy. And, it was like a running joke, you know, I mean, it was a running joke. People would tie stuff together all the time on me just to give me a hard time because I couldn't even untie things. So, you know, it's okay to have gaps in your capabilities. We all do. And hopefully, you know, your team can back you up. So share that too. Don't just look for what your folks need. You always realize that you need stuff and there's going to be stuff that escapes your grasp and that's okay. And there's no perfect people. Everybody's got inefficiencies, deficiencies, blind spots, and that's all right. And then, so that I apologize. I do have to run. I've got an appointment with people who don't allow me to be late. And so I just want to say thank you to this team. I think this is one of my favorite teams. I say that to all of them, but you really are all my favorites. And thank you for all you do for me and for your communities and for fire engineering. And if anybody out there wants to write, it's real simple. Just write what you know and send it in to us. If you want to teach at FDIC, watch the website. We'd love to have you. We're an open book. You don't have to know anybody or anything. These guys all review the presentations for me and a couple dozen other people. So, you know, put your best shot out there. It took me 3 or 4 times to get picked up back in the day. And you just keep trying you know, so please, if you want to teach, you know, start thinking about what you might want to teach. If you want to write, start writing. And you don't even have to know English. We have folks down here who'll make it English for us. So Bill Gustin would send like things on a legal pad, one continuous sentence for 10 pages. And so, you know, the folks that work for us, that they'll take care of that. So love to have people contribute. Every firefighter has something to share. And we hope at FDIC, every firefighter feels welcome. There's no ideology there. There's no secret handshake. All you got to do is be interested in the job, and it doesn't matter what aspect of it you're interested in. We'd love to have you there. So thank you all. I hope everybody has a safe and the rest of the week, and I'll see you next Wednesday on Hump Day Hangout. And Tony, I'll see you tonight on the happy hour with the IFSI.
We'll be there.
Thanks, Chief.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm going to throw it over to Scott Kraut. Scott, I know you've dialed in on your rotary phone from the local payphone on the corner. So I'm sure you probably, I don't know if you're out of quarters yet, but I figured you would probably want to go first so you can jump back off and get back to the family at home. So just we're going to head, you know, just give everybody 2 minutes, just kind of wrap it up, you know, as far as the company officer's role in training. And Scott, let's just give us your swan song there, as you have risen and fallen through the ranks in the Fairfax County Fire Department multiple times. We certainly love having you aboard here. Your officer role and your leadership qualities are second to none. Your time that you've spent in the training division has been certainly made you a well-rounded leader in your organization. And what do you think your takeaway points are for that role of that company officer in training?
Can you still hear me, Doug?
I can, Scott. Put another quarter in for 2 more minutes.
The clink. like you said, a rise to the phoenix, right? Rise to the ashes, rather. I think overall, I think Tony really hit it on the head. And you brought it up before as well, Doug, and Chief Alton. We're trying to achieve mastery, and we know we'll never get there. I mean, you could have a 40-year career, and, you know, you're not going to master anything. So Chief Carroll's point, you know, training, using the word practice, or I like to say we want to achieve fluency, which is both speed and accuracy, right? So we take those basic concepts, as it's written in, and we're just constantly building on them. And I think from our standpoint as a company officer or training chief or whatever, I think that's the expectation to have, to understand that this is a growing product. The youngest firefighter is a seed, you know, and throughout his or her career span, you're only going to get better. When you stop seeing that, you know, that's that catalyst where you, you know, where as a company officer, you need to say, whoa, we're not that good. You know, we can be better. And to your point, Doug, you know, you run the call, and it's never perfect. There's always something you could be better. Even if it's just you could have done it faster. So So I think, you know, my closing remark would be to Chief Carroll's point is that, you know, we all know it is training, but the reality is we're just constantly trying to achieve fluency, which is speed and accuracy, and just get better. And at some point, hope that we can get close to mastery. That's all that I got, Doug. I mean, you know, all of our discussions, you know, specifically about how to get to that level. I think the company officer, the organization, I think if everybody just keeps in mind that that's what we're striving for, then the task becomes less daunting.
Oops, sorry about that. There we go. Scott, thank you for that. Yeah, you're 100% right, man. I think, you know, we all recognize that preparedness, readiness comes through the tone in the company set by the company officer. You know, that we talk about reputations, and by and large, you know, a company officer can set the tone, and the tone can be reflected in the reputation. Thank you for your addition today, Scott. I know you said you had to run too, so if you got to jump off the line, certainly feel free. Get back to your family. Tony, I'll throw it over to you for 2 minutes, your closing remarks.
Again, the company officer's responsibility for training is to make their crew better, right? Just to make their crew better. And that may be the mindset that we all should have, whether it's the basic probationer firefighter, all the way to the chief, right? Is that you should leave in the morning better than you got there. And that's kind of what you should do. There's no, you know, amount of hours, set hours that's going to accomplish that. So it's just a mindset, a learning mindset is what needs to pervade all over the fire service. I do want to say one thing to those bosses. The bosses, you need to give time so those members can be better. One of the things that hurts me as a boss is that we come in that morning and I know a company officer's got something planned, and then the orders come down that they need to go do a pub ed thing or something. And then that works into that. So give the people time and they'll get better. And that's really my last comment is, remember, you're going to hear me say this a lot, but you're only as good as your next fire. So take the time to get better, to get that. And that's it. So thank you. Thanks again, guys, for including me. I can't wait for next month.
Awesome. Steven, I'll throw it over to you, and then I'll wrap up with Chief Heller.
All right. Well, first of all, once again, it was wonderful to be chatting with you guys today. I'll keep it simple. I still believe that the company officer, since we started off talking about company officers and training, I still believe that the company officer is the most influential role in the fire service. And I think there's a convergence between the concepts of leadership, influence, and training. And through training, there's so many ways to model and demonstrate every leadership trait that's out there. And I'll go back to saying what I said before. In doing that, it transcends the content of the training. Through anything from going over a simple piece of equipment to an all-day drill, there's so many ways a company officer can basically model and display some of those leadership traits. And that's where I'll leave it.
Well said, brother. Well said. Thank you for that. And thank you for joining us today. All right, Aaron, bring us home, my man.
Well, the company officer is simply the heartbeat of it. It really is. You can make or break a fire department with good or bad company officers. And the morale, everything that goes with it, you know, set the tempo. As a company officer, I always thought the company officer when I was doing it was just, it was so much fun to be that. You have the opportunity. You have the opportunity to mold a group and really step out and really show people what you got and why your guys are so good. Have company pride. Be the ones that want that and want to be ready for that next fire. And by having a strong company officer who's dedicated to training, who's dedicated to their people, knowing what their people need, and maybe not even what their people understand they need, but you do, you're going to make your department so much stronger and your company stand out. And to me, we always wanted to be the best in our area. There's no reason why that shouldn't happen. So it's all about that company officer getting out there. Last thing I got, we do a lot of training down Louisiana with the on-scene guys. Thibodeau Fire Department is one of our biggest hosts for everything. And they lost a fellow this week to COVID, one of the old timers, Donald Antis. Everybody called him Mr. Donnie. And Mr. Donnie wasn't an officer that I know of, but he was the kindest, gentlest old timer. 95 degrees, we're packing hose up after we got done doing training. And here's this mid-70s man hunched over rolling hose. And I said, sir, you don't have to do that. And he says, yes, I do. I can. Let those young boys rest a little bit. Leadership, leadership, leadership. So they lost him. I think he's being laid to rest today. So God bless. Otherwise, I'll see you guys next month, man. I'm stoked.
Thank you for that. Yeah, like I said before, unfortunately, you know, there aren't too many days to go by that we don't have on our calendars a somber reminder of something or someone we've lost, a significant event. So just a couple of my last takeaways. I was jotting down some notes from you fellas here. You know your people, right? Be striving for mastery. Get the team on the same page. Have patience. Be competent. Set expectations and tempo. Empower your people. Have influence. And I think most of that comes back to a concept that I heard through Ricky Riley, who's not on the phone call today, and Pete Lund, which is about being combat ready, right? We work in an environment where fire doesn't discriminate, right? It doesn't care if it's your first day on the job or you're that salty, grizzly veteran with 35, 40 years on the job. It doesn't discriminate. It'll kill you all the same. It doesn't care if you're a volunteer or career, your first day on, your last day off, you're getting ready to retire. So we have to be ready for that 5-year career. And I think, Tony, you alluded to that earlier. That comes through training, right? And then the slogan that's in our training academy, you know, let no man's ghost come back to say his training let him down. I think that's a fair point. And I think that's a valid statement. Much of what we do and why we do it is in honor of those that have come before us. And I think we owe it to their legacies to continue to strive to be better today than we were yesterday. And I heard that coming out of a lot of your voices, guys, on the call today. So I thank you for that. I thank you for Fire Engineering and Chief Holton for giving us the platform to be able to have this hump day hangout and this discussion this afternoon with you on Facebook Live. And then also, I guess it'll be streamed out sometime tonight on another platform. So I will turn this meeting back over to Pete to close us out. Thank you very much, everybody, for your time today. And we'll talk to you soon.